Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Good evening, everybody. Dr. Jeff here with Jim Case in Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Hello,
evening, hello,
everybody. Hello.
It is Wednesday night. We were doing a little bit of pre-work for what we might talk about tonight, and spent about an hour hitting some different ideas and topics. And you know what, gang? We didn't come up with a darn thing. So we have our eyes closed and our ears wide open, and we're just going to move and see where we get moved to go to. Our overall theme, if you're just joining us, and if you're not just joining us as a quick review, would be we've been exploring this idea, this word, truth. It has evolved quite a bit for me. This has been personally quite an eye-opening endeavor from where we were when we started 6 months ago or so.
Absolutely.
You know, we've done, I think this is our 23rd or 24th episode now. Been meeting weekly and cranking out a couple of hours of conjecture and some really fascinating to us information and experiences and journey and growth. So where we started with the idea of truth and where we are now, quite a wide range of a chasm in between beginning and where we are now. And who knows where we're going to end up. Maybe we will simply fill in the gap. You know, we're doing bookends perhaps right now, and we might find that truth means a lot of different things that, you know, of course there's context. Context is always so vitally important.
Huge.
What's fun for myself and Jim can talk about this as well as we open up to these ideas and concepts in our weekly journeys. Videos will be sent my way. I'll just happen to stumble across something, or you know, all of these serendipitous, synergistic phenomena, it just shows up. It's like, hey, the universe wants us to talk about this, or these curiosities just happen to, you know, I've been looking at that Time magazine now sitting on my girlfriend's table for 3 weeks, and tonight I'm going to open it, and wow, what do you know? There it is. There's something written about truth, and then that sticks with me, and it's just kind of fun how those sorts of things roll along. And that's my way of sometimes just laughing along with God or the universe or the gremlin in my mind, however that works. Just the humor of where we're gonna go, what time we're gonna spend. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that, Jim, as how that works for you in our weekly journeys between podcasts. What your experience is with, we have a topic, we've kind of agreed on a topic, and we just keep moving. Rolling along with it. Ta-dum, ta-dum, boom. Here you go. It says over to Jim. If you don't want to take it, I'll keep going. Just let me know.
My truth is I don't take my work home with me.
Okay. Really?
So kidding. It's very interesting because I think because I've, and not that we don't all, but I think my focus has been so intent on this impending change with my move that there probably, and typically in my life, there is always stuff that shows up that relates to what I'm doing, but I haven't noticed it as predominantly around this. More so, I think, as we've gotten our legs under us and a little more momentum, I think each week now I have more, there's more kind of awareness and thought to where are we going this week, what are we going to talk about this week. I think the quality and content seems to get deeper and richer, and I love being inspired by what I'm doing, and I think that's something we were talking about pre this, is that there's sort of a natural flow that occurs when you set an intention, when you're clear about what you want to do, or you're fully engaged, that there are all these cooperative components that sort of, you know, show up. There's things you're inspired to do, there's things you're inspired to get into because of where your energy is, because of where your focus is. And I happen to personally love that space because I don't really focus a lot on how to do anything. So I don't focus on how am I going to do a podcast, I focus on that I'm going to do a podcast. I don't focus on how am I going to come up with ideas, I allow the discussion and I allow the energy of us to inform that, so I can be inspired through that, so that what we do come up with is aligned in all of what we're doing, and it serves all, you know, and I think we all do in our own fashion. We bring the best of who we are to the experience because it energizes us, because there's an intention and a focus to it. So even if in the course of the week I don't have a lot of time to focus in it, when I do bring my energy, when I do relax into, okay, it's podcast time, it's, and that happens before I get here, that happens the day before, you know, I mean, sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's shorter, depending on how much focus I'm using elsewhere, but there's something to just falling into that space and then allowing it to unfold and being inspired by the space instead of needing to determine how that's going to look and how it's going to work and what it's going to look like and how am I going to get there from here and how am I going to say what I need to say and how am I going to convey powerful comments and thoughts and how am I going to compete with Jeff and how am I, you know. And I giggle about that because it's not a competition at all.
Good.
No, truly is not. It's good. Just... It's just that the mind will,
yeah,
you know, the,
yeah,
mind comes up with all
it
kinds
wants
of
to play
crap.
Yep.
So I really like living in that place where I don't get burdened by the hows. I know what I want and I focus on what that is and you know, largely I think how that's gonna feel, how it feels and let it inspire me each day to whatever it is that needs to show up. And so it makes my day a little more unconventional because I'm not walking in a linear direction. I'm not in a straight line. To somebody on the outside, it may look like I bounce all over the place. But in my world, it's very cohesive. In my world, it's very connected because there's an inspiration that I was sharing with Jeff is, you know, I do some driving with one of the driving companies you know, so at night I kind of, okay, tomorrow's going to be a driving morning, so I kind of get my head in that space, and I'm going to have a successful day driving, and it's going to be good, and, you know, and then I go to sleep, and I wake up, and the first thought is, you're not driving today. I'm like, oh, okay, change of plans. Who changed the plans? What happened? And, I mean, I make it sound like I don't know what's going on, but when there's so many other things happening, being in that space of allowing allows me to be ready and available to what's ready and available. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I'm in the moment of, oh, there are things that I can, apparently that I can take care of in the house since we're moving that are of more importance than needing to get in the car and go drive right now. And so when I allow that, when I do that, I'll spend an hour or two doing whatever that is, and then all of a sudden I'll have the feeling of, okay, I want to turn the app on, I want to go drive. And I'll turn the app on, and I'll go drive, and I'll spend the next 2 or 3 hours ride after ride after ride after ride after ride, and then all of a sudden I'll be like, I'm so over this. What now? And then I'll have to, like, go to the bathroom where I'll be super hungry. So I'll be, okay, I'm going to take a break for a minute or for an hour or whatever it is. And that leads me to the next thing. And it's not an unfocused thing at all. Everything is focused. It's every moment of now is focused on something. So it isn't a space of sort of wandering around aimlessly going, what am I going to do with my... It's, I'm intent, and my intention is very clear. I have a very powerful and large goal that's looming in my near future. And we all do, depending on what it is that we're looking at, whether it's a move like I'm going through, whether it's just going to your job, whether it's a new job, whether it's a new relationship, it really doesn't matter. It's approaching it from that space of joy and wonder and enthusiasm about what you're creating. And from that stimulates, and I think we've talked about this way, way back at the beginning of our podcasts, it's a tenet that I learned very many, many years ago that I think is very powerful, and that's that be, do, have. The idea of be, do, have. And we've messed that up horribly in our culture and our society, because for the most part, we've put do at the beginning of the equation, and have is the next step in the equation, and be is if you got time. And that's completely back-asswards.
Yep.
And so the beingness is the beingness is what I'm talking about, is that in being in the moment means being in now, being present with what's happening in your own energy field, what's happening in your emotional body, what's happening here now, and then being able to respond to that in a way that engages. So because I'm focused and I know that my end result is over there, in this case being a move, that I can allow for adjustments and shifts because I'm inspired through my own energy system, and I trust my energy system enough now to know that when I get that nudge, when I get that feeling, that's what I have to pay attention to. Not analyzing it, not dissecting it, not spending all kinds of time getting crazy about, well, God, that's so not what I think I should be doing. It's trusting the impulse and saying, oh, okay, yeah, it makes me a bit uncomfortable that I'm not going to drive today because I do have a goal to achieve in order to move. But I get to trust that my internal system is guiding me through that, through the what's the expression? Ease and flow. Through the points of least resistance. And it just validates so many amazing things that I've read over the years. But
blue heron.
Oh. We just had a thing that sounded like a baby getting drowned or something. I don't know what it was. Any thoughts on that? No, we had that. I guess the bird was saying, shut up.
Stop.
Your turn.
Oh, boy. Oh, I was imagining riding with you as you're driving, and what a blessing that would be. That as you described, you drive, but what you're really doing is you're getting to spend moments of time with people who have a true blessing that they get to experience you, stimulating them to think more about and be more of who they are. They think they're getting transported from point A to point B in the physical, which they are, but they're also being transported from asleep to awake, and mm-hmm. from fear to love,
mm-hmm.
as you are pouring yourself into them. So they're very lucky. They're very lucky to get to spend time with you.
Wow. I hadn't gone that far, but I appreciate that. It's so interesting. That's the process of doing the driving has been actually a very, very profound experience from the very beginning. I remember sharing this with one of my friends, how microcosm, macrocosm the experience is, because the way the process is set up is that It's so much like what I'm talking about, the be, do, have. To start the process, you just turn the app on, and then you be. You just hang out. And you hang out until you get a signal. And then when you get the signal tells you where you need to go. And it only tells you where you need to go. It doesn't tell you anything else. It doesn't tell you where you're going after that. It doesn't tell you who. It just says, here's who you're meeting, and here's where they are. Go there. Once you get there, you'll be given instruction where to go next. And it's such an amazing parallel to this whole idea of be, do, have. Because when I allow the process, like this driving process, when I allow it, the ping happens. All I have to do is, it tells me exactly where to go. I don't even have to guess. I don't have to figure out how to get there. I already have a car. I don't have to figure anything out. I just, okay. 5 minutes away from Jane, and I'm going to pick Jane up at wherever this destination is. And then when I get there, all I have to do is engage this individual, and then as I push another button, it's going to tell me where she's going. And then I get the joy of being able to transport them from that place to some other place. All the while, I don't have to do anything but show up. I don't have to figure it out. I already know how to drive, right? I already learned that tool. I already have that skill.
Yeah, that's in the subconscious.
Right, yeah. So I don't have to, there's nothing I have to do but show up and be willing to engage. So I'm going to be by being a driver, and then I'm going to do because I get a signal, and the universe sends me a signal, and I follow the signal. And then when I get to that destination, it gives me another signal. So what else do I need in the process of life if I'm constantly getting signaled where I need to be, and I'm being shown where the heck I need to go? It's not even like I have to figure. I don't have to dissect it. I don't have to research it. I don't have to do anything except follow the prompt. And that to me is what being inspired is all about. It's a prompt. It's I set this amazing intention for myself, and I want to create X. So my energy is, that's where my energy is focused, and it's this huge focus. It's just, you know, directed there. And then I just wait for a signal because I sent the ping to that destination already.
So we're talking about the truth of intention tonight. And we're talking about the truth of being available, the truth of being tuned in, the truth of being aware. Those are the truths that we're touching on this evening. It's an interesting metaphor. Not being a driver, being an end user of that product. My assumption was that the driver not only knows where to go, but also knows where I want to go,
and is
making the choice of whether I want to do that journey or not. Because maybe you don't want to drive all the way to Oceanside. It's 2 a.m. in the morning, and I'm at the San Diego airport, and I want to get to Oceanside. And you're thinking, I'll do one more tonight, but it'll be like a 5-minute job or something. And the next thing you know, it's, you know, an hour and a half in the making or whatever. So that's interesting that you have to commit. I mean, let's go with this metaphor a little bit deeper. You're saying I'm willing, I'm able, and I'm committed because I'm responding to this signal. And I don't know where it's going to take me, but I'm going to go with it.
Because my intention is I'm doing this task in order to make money. So my goal is how that's going to feel, because I'll be able to pay my bills, I'll be able to pay my rent, I'll be able to do those things. So the idea of that feels really good to me and feels very solid and feels very forward moving, right? So I'm good with that.
Somewhere along the way, I'm thinking of the app designer being like God. And somewhere along the way, God of the app decided that if we give the drivers the choice, if we give them the information of where the customer wants to go, they could decide not to take that job, right? So there had to be some thought that was put into that.
For that very reason.
Uh-huh.
They chose not to do that because it's not a cab service. It's peers, people driving people. It's the whole premise was originally, the idea was it was just peers. It was somebody who had a car who could give somebody who didn't have a car a ride. And it's obviously evolved into something a bit greater than that. But at the core, it's still the same thing. But the idea that that whole, my understanding of that was that if you're choosing to engage in the driving experience because you have time to do that, then you get to give up deciding how the journey is going to look. You get to engage in the journey. So if you're choosing to, the metaphor fully extends, if you're trusting in the process of your evolution and the signals that you receive from, whether it's your higher self or the universe or God, whatever the heck you call it, you either trust them or you don't. If you trust them, then you trust them and you know, oh, okay, this impulse is taking me here. This signal is saying I need to go 3 miles down the road. Don't know. There's a lot of trust involved. You don't know who's there. You know, I mean, you have a picture, you have a little profile picture of that person. You don't know where they're going. You don't know what the end game is. Sometimes you get there and, you know, I found over time, it always works out in the bigger picture. So if I get there and it's a poopy little ride, there's no point in anything other than being fully available to that person, taking them to their destination, because their destination is leading me to the next sure. leg of my journey.
Of course.
You know? And to expand that metaphor so that the listeners understand this, so I live in a part of town, in the east part of town, so I'm not even in the downtown area. I get up in the morning and I turn the app on and I don't leave my house until I have my first ping, until the universe says it's time to go. Then I go. Well, in this case, it's the driving company, but you know, my metaphor is mm-hmm. the universe says,
yeah.
here's your signal.
Same
ready, set, go.
It's all one source.
Yeah. And I said, and I've always said categorically that from that point on, I don't care where I go. It's all the adventure. So in the course of 3 hours, I can be all over San Diego County before people even wake up in the morning. You know, and the person that I pick up who's going to work at 7 o'clock thinks that, you know, I just happen to get on the road for them to take them to work at 7 o'clock. Well, I've already been all over San Diego County before they wake up, you know. But the extraordinary thing about that trust process and about being willing to allow that to be what it is as it is that I've gotten to experience people and places and things in the market that I never would have experienced otherwise. If I was filtering and controlling the environment the whole time, mm-hmm. I would never, I mean, I am amazed at the extraordinarily beautiful pockets of places there are in this area. Just neighborhoods that just are stuck in like these right. weird little places right. and you drive in and go, where the heck did this come from? You know, and it's just stunning and beautiful and I would never have seen it otherwise.
Right, right.
Yeah. And just meeting all kinds of interesting people. And, you know, I've done 2.5 years I've been doing this in on and off, you know, around other things. And I've never had a bad experience. Never had a bad experience.
There's a feature in one of the apps that allows you to be a single user mm-hmm. or... I can't remember the category of which there's a choice, like, again, going from San Diego. I used to keep my boat down in San Diego, and occasionally I would take the boat down there and need a ride back here, here in Oceanside for the listeners. And you could select whether I'm kind of in a hurry and I just want the ride to be just for me.
Yeah. The difference is you buy all 4 seats and you buy 1 seat.
Okay. So a couple of times I'm like, well, I'm really not in a hurry, so it could be a group ride, and we'll see who pings along. Mm-hmm. And I think 3 out of the 4 times I've done that, nobody else pinged.
Right.
But what was interesting is, like, because I was willing to have somebody else come with me, it was a lesser fare mm-hmm. than had I just said I want it all myself yeah. kind of thing, which is not such a good deal for the driver.
Doesn't change anything for the driver.
Oh, really?
No. Doesn't change anything.
Well, that's fascinating.
Yeah. The discount comes from their end.
So not really, the benefit is only to the company. Because if you picked up 3 people, would the driver get more?
No.
Oh, so it's really just to the... It's a gamble that the company is taking, that
yes.
there will be other people that will want to go in that direction during this journey.
Yes.
When 3 out of my 4 times there hasn't been anybody else that's
right.
pinged for a pickup, and I think they said it can only delay your trip by like 5 minutes for each one that you would pick up. It would only be like 5 minutes off your route, so it would only delay it potentially by a total of 15 minutes or something like that. So I just thought that was...
Typically.
Yeah. We're going with the metaphor of you don't know where you're going when you show up to pick the person up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to pretty much everything we encounter in our lives. We really don't have a clue where we're going. We have ideas and we have intentions. Even if you're going to school to get a degree, that is an end result. That is not the journey. So you have no idea what's going to happen between there, here, and there. All you know is you have an intention. I want to achieve this result. Mm-hmm. And the rest requires some focus, requires some decision making, but a lot of it is trust and faith that, one, that destination is where you really want to be, and as you're moving along the path, trusting that the people you encounter, the school that you're at, the people you're going to be involved with, the teachers and educators you're going to be involved with, the counselors you're going to be involved with, are all going to, in essence, conspire on your behalf to help you achieve that goal. But if you don't have the trust and faith, then those cooperative components can't be cooperative because the cooperation isn't happening in here. So you can have an intention, but if you're not in that space of allowing, or that space of letting the journey unfold, you're limiting the amount of possibility for the amount of support that can show up. But that's happening through you because you're narrowing your field of energy, because you're thinking you have to control it all, or you have to manage it all. You have to know how it's going to happen, and you don't. And I think if most of us sat in any situation or conversation and actually honestly really could answer a question about why do you need to know how it's going to happen, most probably couldn't answer the question. Without it being a lot of stupid story that has nothing to do with the end result. It has a lot to do with stuff that's been made up in the mind, and stuff that arguments and agreements and disagreements that some other significant person in your life has thrown at you about your choices and decisions. I mean, there's so many other influences. But when you trust in that core of who you are and you allow that, then the possibilities expand with that, because you're now no longer limiting. You're not limiting how it's going to unfold because you don't care. In the end, I could care less how most things happen.
Yeah.
I'm just excited about them happening. And that's what gets me from here to there. And the fun part about being conscious about it and being in attention is all of the cool things you get to experience on the way to it. I forget where it was. I think it might even have been Law of Attraction stuff, but isn't it always interesting that whenever we achieve something, it's not lasting typically. It may last in our ability to do it, but our interest in it doesn't typically hold very
well.
But if you were in attention to the journey all the way, man, you're full as all get out, because it was an amazing, extraordinary, non-stop adventure of fun that culminated in the creation of my desire. And now I go, cool, what's next? Very much like you've talked about. What's next? You know, I've done flying, I've done careening through the desert on an electric car, I've done ships, I've done...
I rode a horse across the desert with no name.
There you go. And I bet all of those journeys were just unbelievable in many ways.
I'm shifting back to this don't even know what to call it, a concept, a precept, or some sort of sept that I've been playing with the last two or three podcasts, of the idea of truth being something that doesn't exist. It's more of a desire that we have for there to be something substantive, tangible, measurable, repeatable, and we call that the scientific model. Mm-hmm. I was taking a peek at there's a film that Anthony Hopkins has been working on, somewhat summarizing his life of what he's learned.
Mm.
And truth is kind of the topic of it. Yeah. I was just
love him.
Yeah, who can't love him,
right?
And his summation was, it was like, damn it, I said that before I heard it from him. And he's like, it doesn't exist. He calls it a dream at best. He goes, our awake experience is no different than our asleep experience. Hmm. And it's all illusion, it's all intention, it's all unfolding as we're open to it. And he believes intention has a lot to do with it. He's like, I have no idea how my career happened. I have no idea. There's no formula for it. It just literally, like, it was a dream. He describes it like, I got to be awake and have this dream life that happened for me. And he goes, it's no different than my night dreams. It's just an awake dream.
Hmm.
Yeah, fascinating, right?
Wow.
But there is no concrete, solid truth that you can actually say it's repeatable and predictable, and you know, that's just a fairy tale that we need to believe in for some reason. It'll be interesting to kind of stay tuned with that project he's working on, as he's just trying to help people let go of, you got to go to get a marketing, you have to get an MBA, and you have to figure out the formula. You have to get your 10,000 hours in. Because that's actually still a pretty current model of understanding, that the tipping point, mm-hmm. that book that Malcolm Gladwell wrote, that he documented the Beatles when they came to America, had just performed, like, they just finished their 10,000th hour in all these different small little tiny venues in Britain, came to America, and because they paid their dues, and Malcolm Gladwell documented 10,000 hours as being like the magic number where the universe says, you've done enough practice, boys, now it's time for the show.
Mm.
And there's so many examples. The guy that did Hewlett-Packard, Microsoft, I could name probably five or six if I really dove into this and thought about it, but each of these examples that he gave, the guys had spent at least 10,000 hours in their labs, in their garages, and that's like this magic number of experience. It's like, you tell the universe or show the universe that you're really serious about this enough that you can do it 10,000 times, then that's the payoff. He documented Little League players that go on to play Major League Baseball, and it's, you know, this pivotal point around 10,000 hours. But now Anthony Hopkins is just saying, you know, yeah, there's a coincidence there, but it's really more about this intention that you set, and it just kind of so happens that because there's this mindset built around 10,000 hours. I mean, this even goes back to Shakespeare, this 10,000 hour thing. It's not new, but it's just more new in the marketplace or in marketing, in the business disciplines. I think there's even a biblical reference, something to do with 10,000 times, or there's a Buddhist, it's not the man who has 10,000 kicks, it's the man who has kicked 10,000 times. And that's like 5,000 years old, that specific phrase. Or it's from a Bruce Lee movie, one of the two. But isn't Bruce Lee like considered to be like a wise man? Anyway, I'm rambling at this point, but it was, and we talked in the very beginning of our podcast tonight about just being open and kind of paying attention to what's showing up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that showed up for me this week, was this idea that another, and I'm totally not tied to this idea of whether truth is real or not. It's just like, hey, it came to me, and I'm willing to be the guy who doesn't have to be right and is just kind of like, what if it? And let's play with that. Let's let that be devil's advocate for a month or two or three and kind of see what shows up there. And something's going to show up, and we'll either dismiss it by Christmas, or we'll still be talking about it by Christmas.
Well, it seems more and more interesting that you're bringing that up again, because it does seem more and more, at least in feeling to me, that there seems to be a bit more truth to the idea that truth is about individual experience and perception. And as opposed to what would be considered laws of the universe, so to speak, which are just those immutable things that... But even those, it's kind of hard to say, are they or aren't they? And in the end, what difference does it make? Meaning, I can't follow somebody else's truth. I can only be in my truth.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to be in someone else's truth, it's not a very happy experience. Because then there's no real connection or alignment to your own energy system. You're kind of pissing it all away on somebody else's something. And so there's not really any, you're not connecting to self in the same fashion. So it's more and more, getting more and more fascinating sort of thinking about how truth shows up and how much of it is really tied to intention. You know, that the truth, the thing that I would call a truth is really, I guess tied to bone. Even as I'm sitting here thinking about it, I'm thinking, there are consistent experiences that I have had, and this move is one of them. This impending move was this clarity and intention about creating a shift in my experience, and about, you know, feeling like there wasn't energy here for me, in not being able to get traction, and thinking, okay, maybe I'm not in the right place, maybe I need to change things up. And that being my truth. But what I realize about it for me is that truth is consistently and unerringly doesn't alter regardless of circumstance. So when I came to my truth about the need to move, I was absolutely clear that regardless of circumstance, that would have to be, that's what would take place. And it's a feeling thing. It's like, it's a clarity that you have where if Michael chose not to go, it doesn't change my need to go. And so that would create a whole other dynamic that would have to be assessed. And what would have to be sacrificed for that? Because something would have to give. Someone, either someone gives up some of who they are, or in staying in who you are, you move forward without the other person. Not out of anything other than, it could still be in complete love, but the clarity, the truth of what I know I need doesn't change, even if the person closest to me can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if my mind has 47,000 reasons why, mm-hmm. it shouldn't, couldn't, wouldn't, can't, won't, we're all going to die.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't change what I'm doing. It doesn't alter anything, except...
I'm stumbling over semantics right now, perhaps.
Let's clarify.
I'm hearing you talk about flow, but using the word truth to talk about flow.
Mm.
And are those synonymous for you? Or can we separate them a little bit?
So... When I have a clarity of intention, and that intention is my truth, all that can come from that is flow. If I stay in that space, if I attempt to decide how it's going to happen, I put resistance in the process, and now it's no longer flow. If I push in any way, if I get impatient, I'm putting resistance in the process, and that slows things down. I don't think that I think you can derail yourself, but flow to me is the result of being aligned with your intention and your truth, which usually are pretty synonymous. But flow is more a result of those energies. It's not, they're not interchangeable. I mean, you can't call, truth flow. They also, I think, are
when you say
different
my
words
truth,
in English.
That to me, you're describing my path, what I'm supposed to do, the direction I'm going in, the rate at which I'm going in it, or pausing. So, and to me, it's flow would be the opposite of resistance, and it's happening. I mean, somebody could climb Mount Everest, and they're not just going to flow right up there.
There
is significant. Well, I don't know. I'm not an expert at that. But
flow would mean being able to move through that experience without unnecessary resistance, without unnecessary obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that because I'm in the zone with what I know to be true for myself, that the movement. The movement up the mountain is, there are certain paths that are prescribed for going up the mountain.
Sure.
Right.
Based on weather, time of year,
right.
Amount of snowfall.
So that's already a done deal. So you're choosing whichever of those paths you feel best suits this apparatus,
mm-hmm.
which, and that's going to include how much weight you're carrying.
Sure.
It's going to include
last time you tried
the
Sherpa that went up 2 weeks before.
Exactly.
And made it.
Yeah. So there is a in that case, the flow is in, I am in alignment with my environment, I'm in alignment with my destination, I'm in alignment with all of this. My focus is, I want to get there. So I've got the best Sherpa, I've got the best team, I've got the best equipment for me, whatever that may look like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all been coordinated because I've picked the right people to be in the right circumstances of this experience, or they've picked me depending on how they showed up in my life, because my intention was, I'm getting to the top of the mountain. So all the cooperative components are all the details that come together as a result of that. The ease and flow is, how much do I believe I can get there? How much trust do I have in me to know that I can make the journey from here to there? And while I can read all the books about all the people's experiences, and all the people who died in avalanches, and all the people who fell off the mountain, and all the people who, all those things that happened, and I can incorporate that into my thought process, into my consciousness, that will then become part of my journey, because I have now entrained my system to things that are not necessarily ease and flow, and they were somebody else's experience. But now I've put those kind of chunks in my system. Doesn't mean you have to create it, but if you put enough energy there, then that's what your flow is going to be. If your flow is, I got the best team, I know the route that serves me and this team, I know blah 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 blah, and trusting that process, then you create a whole different flow, and that flow becomes one that's synonymous with your vibration. And it doesn't mean that stuff can't happen. It doesn't mean that you're not going to get blasted into the side of a mountain by a snowstorm.
Right.
But what it means is that your alignment, your clarity, and your unwillingness to put resistance into the process, that you experience that as a part of the journey of the process and not a hindrance to the process. It's all focused on how the focus is different. If you think about that in terms of, well, I want to go to the top of the mountain, but I don't want to feel wind, and I don't want it to rain. Well, you could go there, and you could potentially create enough intention and have enough clarity that your energy could be big enough to create a bubble that could create that to happen. But the likelihood is there's a whole lot more influences going on than just me on the mountain. So willingness to recognize that whatever shows up is part of the journey, and you say, cool, okay, so how do I, and that's the difference that we talked about before, about approaching in fear versus approaching in opportunity. In fear, it's all resistance. It's all, oh my God, it's raining, oh my God, we're going to die, oh my God, this is over. In opportunity, you go, oh, I get to experience this weather phenomena. I've been trained for it. I know what I need to do. I know what we need to set up. I know the people who are with me know what we need to do. So let's hunker down, because all we get to do for the next 12 hours is hunker down. But I brought my Uno game so that we can at least enjoy each other while we're hunkering down, you know, whatever the case may be. So you have more. It's opportunity. It's not fear.
Let's keep climbing Mount Everest.
Okay.
It would be fascinating for me to know the data between the number of people who have set the intention and who came prepared with training and expertise and resources and time to accomplish that feat. And some people, it worked out in their very first expedition. Mm-hmm. And they brought everybody to the top and they got everybody back down. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm just making it up, that it's a possibility. And there are people that in their 10th expedition have never been to the top, and every time they tried, someone died, or life and limb in some way were risked. But their intention was the same as the person who had complete flow and all of life's mysteries unlocked, all the doors and the weather and the climate and the chirpas and the crickets, everything aligned for them to have that experience. What I've learned as a psychotherapist is the person that's still working at it in their 10th time is actually the one that's far more committed to it and has far more life lessons to learn from this experience, and it means more to them than the person who just nailed it the first time around. And that, I mean, there's value to each. But it's actually, you know, was it Einstein who talked about the journey being more important than the destination, the experience along the way? So it's kind of hard to say. It's hard, certainly not being a mountain climber.
The person who's gone for the 10th time and still hasn't done it can still be in flow.
Mm-hmm.
They can still be completely in flow. But like you said, there is more to their journey, more to the unfolding of it. And they're more willing to explore it. But there's also the flip side, which is what's the difference in the core vibration of each individual? Because mm-hmm. while they have an intention, it doesn't obviate all the energy you bring to the event or to any experience. To the points that you've talked about, at least the way I see it, there's unlimited possibilities for what's going to provide you the greatest forward momentum, you know, for the person who was able to coordinate and get up there and do it in one shot. One, like you said, one way is not right and the other way is wrong. It's what serves that individual. Is it that the person who's on their 10th excursion is still working through what it means to be successful? Are they working through what it means to achieve a goal? Maybe they don't have any idea how to achieve a goal. So they don't realize that it's their energy and their focus that achieves the goal. And so I'm not saying this is all hypothetical.
Right, sure.
But in the end, you know, the persistence, yeah, you learn a lot. Do you learn more? I don't know. Are you learning the same lesson? You know, is it the 10th time because you still refuse to pay attention to what's the nose on your face? You know what I mean? That expression,
right.
You know, is it the 10th time because you don't have enough patience to flesh out the details that you need to know? And that's the continuing theme of your journeys is your unwillingness to focus on it. You're willing to focus on the goal, but you're not willing to focus on the detail. The things that help to smooth out that flow and that journey. Because you are the only one who can influence that. The people that are there with you are influenced by you because it's your intention. And yeah, there's 10 or 12 people in your group and maybe they all have different intentions or different ideas, but if you coordinated it, then your energy is what prevails in the entirety of the group and everybody else is contributing according to that energy, from my perspective. Mm-hmm. So there's so many possible variations for good and bad, you know, positively and negatively, for why that 10 trips are successful or not successful. Has that person come to a point where they realize that success is not about necessarily getting to the top of the mountain?
Right. Right.
Because for some, that's huge. For others, it doesn't matter.
One of the things I've always found fascinating about people's experiences of achieving a goal like that is the amount of time and effort it takes to get to the top. And they talk about the 10 to 15 minutes of being at the top and how quickly it's over and how fast that experience vanishes, perhaps only to have a catastrophe on the way down, and that it's really hard to remember and hold that with you. People are devastated afterwards because it wasn't what they thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And particularly if it was their 10th time and they finally made it, and then they recall all the people that died along the way with them, that it was like, you know, the whole evaluation after the fact is really fascinating as well.
I love that you said that, because that speaks to exactly what we were just talking about. There's so much fertile ground to dig into just in those five or six sentences you just said about what drives people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about energy. It still comes down to the core vibration.
Yeah, I have a sense at some level what drives us is this desire to feel alive, and that's maybe a truth we could agree on, that there isn't any other reason to come here. If you're not going to get on the court and play the game, there's really no point in doing it.
That was my job title when my ex and I, the center that I worked in, I was the director of aliveness therapy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
My job,
I love it.
Swear to God. And my job was taking these deathly ill people to the Grand Canyon and running them all over the Grand Canyon, literally running them all over the Grand Canyon, and having them remember what a lie felt like, what a lie feels like, and getting back in touch with that experience in themselves to help them to reverse their disease processes.
Yeah. You know, if we could camp on that for a moment, since we both resonated with that notion of this perhaps a core truth of why we come to the planet, it's of most interest to me, to the degree people go out of their way to avoid discomfort. So if you separate things into the category of comfort versus discomfort, mm-hmm. the vast majority of humanity will choose comfort.
Mm-hmm.
To the degree that the senses are dulled so much, there's no sense of aliveness in that place. It blows my freaking mind.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like a core theme that I'm dealing with on a daily basis, of the creature comforts, that we cannot help ourselves from padded chairs and air-conditioned environments and filtered this and just thread counts on sheets, and it's just, oh my gosh, you know, oils and lipsticks and things. It's like, how did we get there to avoid the sensation of aliveness? Just bizarre to me. And it's like, the more that you go to the quietest car, the softest ride, the somebody opening your door, to like, you don't have to do anything, and then you're going to go eat the most succulent meals. So it's almost like there's this extreme kind of, you're going to stimulate the senses in one way beyond measure, like to even go into a room where people are wearing a blindfold and it's all dark, to heighten the senses of smell and taste, and you're eating lion.
Have you done that?
No, I haven't.
I've seen those too. I haven't done them.
It was a thing for a while, yeah. And it kind of came and went.
Yeah.
But it's just of interest to me that there's this, to be considered, say, in high society or the upper crust, that in one regard you avoid discomfort by seeking lavish comfort, but at the same time, maybe to counter that, you're looking for all these exotic experiences to try to balance it all out. And you wouldn't have to do that if you simply stepped into a little bit of discomfort, like go sweat, go sit in the sun for a while, sit on a log. When's the last time anybody has sat on a log or a rock as opposed to a comfy chair or a chaise lounge with stitch counts in the thousands and some cabana boy to come rub suntan lotion on you? And as much as it sounds like I'm judging and pointing fingers, I know there's 10 pointing right back at me when I'm doing the same thing in just a little bit different way.
Well, there's a difference between, I think, indulging and experiencing. I mean, I think we're here to experience. So experiencing thousand count thread sheets would be a cool thing. Do I need to live in them? Probably not. If I did experience them, would I want to live in them? I don't know, because I haven't experienced them. Well, maybe I have, but if I have, I don't know. Those things to me are like interesting, inconsequential kind of things. I mean, it's always cool to experience, you know, things that are not normal to my normal experience. It's always cool to have that kind of, you know. I remember we went to the Biltmore in North Carolina. Is it the Hearst Estate, I think? Is it Hearst? I can't remember. Biltmore. No, it's Biltmore. Hello. It's this huge castle in North Carolina. And it's on this gorgeous acreage, and they, you know, they've turned it into a museum. But it was this guy's house,
mm-hmm.
and he built it for his wife, and it's just kind of interesting when you go through it, thinking how people lived here. What an odd experience that must have been, because as you're walking through this place, it's like it isn't very user friendly. You know, it doesn't have a whole lot of warmth to it.
Right.
You know, it's these unbelievable spaces, opulently appointed and, you know, beautifully done. But then you try to put yourself in the position of living in that and going, wow, this is weird. I mean, I don't even know what this is. I can't find a level of comfort in it personally, you know. But there are other types of wealth that definitely appeal to me, that I would think, oh, no, I could do that. You know, like Richard Branson's type of money.
Yeah.
The way he uses his money, to me, is a little different than the way some others use their money. The thing is, to me, that's remarkable is there's really no wrong truth, in the sense that everybody's doing what they think they should be doing, whether they're, you know, even if they're in resistance or they're in some situation that they would prefer not to be, or something that's beyond what they would have expected. I think there's just that sense that everybody's doing what they need to be doing, and it seems more and more that there's, I mean, in relationship it makes it a little different, because you really have to take into consideration that you're involved with someone whose truths may be vastly different than yours.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily affect compatibility, but it definitely affects how you perceive things. Because my truth, you know, like even with this move, my truth about the move, I'm still discovering impact that this is having on Michael that I never even, that just never even ever occurred to me. You know, I mean, he's moving out of San Diego where he's lived his whole life pretty much. You know, his, a large portion of his family is here, you know, and he's never lived anywhere, as an adult, never lived anywhere else.
That's huge.
It's, and he's just like, I mean, he's going through his paces, but his truth is, I love my husband and I support him. And this is important, so this is what we need to do.
And it'll be okay.
It, out of his mouth. And it'll be okay. And it's going to be good. And I'm going, and every, at every level, I mean, even as I think about it, it makes me emotional because it's just extraordinary for somebody like me who I think I'm pretty conscious, I'm pretty aware, and how much I have no frickin' idea, even in my own awareness, how much I don't know. And it shows up every day, you know, when you go, holy crap, I didn't realize I didn't know that either. But gosh, it's just, ugh, it's just amazing. And it just brings a depth and a richness to the experience, you know, when I think about that. And he's never once pushed back there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's just kind of dealt with his own experience and his own process, and it's come out in weird ways, you know, in some ways that, you know, we might brawl a little bit. But ultimately, none of it is out of lack of support. It's just him finding his way into his support, and he needs to figure out how to get there from here. And I, and because I've made a decision that radically alters his path, he's got a few more boulders to navigate around than I would have considered, because for me it was just a point of clarity, right? I mean, I have family here, I have friends here, but my clarity is in moving, so I'm good with it, and I'm good with that change, and so it's very emotional, but it's not hyper emotional. It's like I have, throughout the day, I'll have 2, 3, 4 times a day where something will show up somewhere and I'll start tearing up, and there's no story. There's no nothing, just this emotion, this feeling of this tremendous change that's happening.
Right. Well, you're feeling.
Oof.
You've just kind of got us back to where we started down this little tributary, which is we're here to feel. And those feelings have a wide range of euphoria to horror. And one isn't any better than the other. Oftentimes, the things that are most challenging and most difficult, we remember the most, and that has the most value to us. Most war vet type reunions, the guys aren't going to talk about, hey, remember the time that all the beer showed up and we got Playboy magazines delivered and we all sat around and did nothing for 6 hours and drank beer and looked at magazines? No, that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about, remember when Bob's head got blown off and, you know, you were holding it and, you know, and all the gunfire and the grenades. And I mean, they're talking about the most intense experiences that they had. And it built a sense of camaraderie of out of that aliveness that they both got to share, that they all got to share. Is what brings them back together again, that they're trying to hang on to or relive or experience once again. So this move is, you know, a high point in each of your lives that is forcing you to feel. You're out of your routine and habit, which we don't feel when we're operating in routine and habit.
Right.
We're not feeling. We're just going along, just the ride. So I know when people, let's say a new restaurant opens and you're driving the same car, maybe wearing different clothes, but kind of going the same time of day, maybe even the same night of week, but it's a new restaurant. Somehow that new ambiance, the new wait staff, the new menu or whatever is shifting enough of the repetition that this is the new thing. We have to come here now, but then pretty soon that habituates and it's just like all the others. Mm-hmm. It's a Friday night, put on some nice clothes, drive to, you know, and it's just like, now though that blends in with all the other 200 times I've done that, and it's kind of like, I don't even remember them, because I really wasn't that alive. Or did that steak taste that much different than the 100 others that I've had? Or did they, you know, sometimes maybe there'll be a presentation, or there'll be something that will occur that will make you feel alive to the point where there's a little two or three brain cells that will connect to that and go, oh, I have a memory of that one. We got in a fight there at that one, or we got a flat tire on the way, or we stopped and had sex on the way, or something. I don't know. But that sense of, we've stumbled onto the truth of, we're here to feel alive. And it isn't always at Disneyland that we feel alive. It isn't always in the bedroom doing the wild thing that we feel alive. Those are examples of that.
Yeah, but feel alive at Disneyland. Just feel overwhelmed and annoyed.
Which is a way of feeling alive, but it's like, why am I paying for this, right? Another That's annoyance.
Funny. Right?
If we're going to go out of our way to feel alive. Occasionally, I find it interesting that I could be accused of planning activities that require, they're more like marathons than sprints. And I know that by putting it together that way, it's going to create some level of either exhaustion or the sense of being spent. Like, I had to put everything into this. That's going to create a sense of aliveness, and there will be memories, and it just forces it to be memorable in its level of difficulty. And some people question, how can that be fun when it seems like it's so hard or so much went into it? And it's like, man, if it's easy, you're not going to remember it. That's my truth. That's my personal mantra or way of doing that, that I could go to the swimming pool in my flip-flops and shorts if I just want to do something easy, and that'll just be one of a thousand times I've done that, that it all blends into, it's a non-event because it's not remembered. There was no sense of aliveness there. Not that every event has to be at that level.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting, something we talked about early on, is that it speaks to the idea of intention and clarity to a large degree. Because if you're being in the moment and you're letting your intention inform and inspire your choices and decisions, then the things that you do, even if it's just throw on a pair of shorts and walk out and get into the pool, has a different experience, because it's not just an activity. It was inspired because I feel like I need to shift something. I need some water. I need to be in water. I need to, I want to go move my body. Whatever the case is. And while it may not be this big, you know, memorable event, it isn't a wasted event.
Right.
It's still part of what gets you from point A to point B.
Or something else you said.
Well, none of the breakfasts I've ever eaten were wasted events. They're just not very memorable.
Yeah. But isn't that true of pretty much everything? As you were talking, I was thinking about my trip to Peru, which was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing, unbelievable adventure. I can barely recall most of it. I mean, I can go through chronologically, and I know what we did on this day, and this day, and this day, and but the experience has already been had. I was there doing it. It's done. So I can share the story of it, and in the sharing the story of it, it'll stimulate some aliveness because it was such a powerful experience. Mm-hmm. But it's not readily present in my experience now. I mean, that was almost a year and a half ago. And I can reflect on how cool it was, but even that requires energy. Mm-hmm. That requires focus going backwards, because I've already been there. I've already done that. So in my consciousness, in my mind, it holds a place of wonder and wonderfulness, but it's not present wonderfulness. It's past wonderfulness.
Yeah.
So it, in order to bring it here, I'd have to dredge it up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty fascinating, because that speaks to that kind of impermanence, the whole idea that once you achieve it, it's done.
Right.
Moving on.
This whole thing brings me back to that Anthony Hopkins idea that we were talking about earlier. It's like, I've had a lot of dreams in my life, and so have you, both awake dreams and nighttime, nocturnal dreams, and we can't remember them. Most dreams vanish within moments of being awakened. Even the ones that's like, oh, that was such an amazing dream, I'm surely going to remember this and write it down, and 5 minutes later it's like, what?
Not, yeah.
So what if our awake times are really not that much different? It's just smoke and mirrors, and it vanishes very quickly and gets us ready for tomorrow.
Yeah. But I think it drives home the message of now. Now, you know? Because, you know, if I think about... I know I took as much as I could in every moment when I was in Peru, which is why it leaves a... When I think about that experience, the only experience I have is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, there is nothing else to that. I mean, we spent 24 hours going one way and 26 hours coming the other way. I slept on the floor in Mexico City in the airport for 7 hours. You know, I mean, there were some pretty shitty things that happened. I mean, inconvenient, let's say.
There were challenges.
But that's not what I remember. I mean, I do now because I was dredging it up. But whenever the idea of talking about Peru comes up, the first word is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Category, you know. And
part of what, in my opinion, part of what made it amazing was the 26 and the 24 and the 7 hour. That's what made, because there was value, that there was a cost, mm-hmm. that took resources of energy and time and money.
Mm-hmm.
So it climbed the ladder of value. What you went through to have that experience makes it a value. Because if you just were... If Scotty could teleport you there, you know, on the Enterprise, mm-hmm. beam me up, Scotty, and you were right there and right back again, would not have nearly the same memorable experience. Doesn't mean it wouldn't have any.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't quite be the same. So level of effort to go and again, people that can travel every week, it all starts blending together, and they have unlimited resources, and there's no expense and no time considerations. They don't remember that stuff. It's just one more of many, many experiences.
Yeah, and that's an interesting... I have had for many years this experience about traveling that has always kind of baffled me. Is I don't... One city to the next, who cares?
Well, unless you're doing something different... Because if you're going there to eat, and you're going there to shop, and you're going
like
there to sleep,
every other place.
How's that any different than all the other places you've been?
And that's exactly the experience. It's just like every other place. And you go, so what was all that about?
I've done this already.
Yeah,
I just wasn't at this longitude, latitude.
Right, and I didn't have to fly 6 hours to do this. I could do this at home. So why did I fly 6 hours to do this? You know, because there is no relative difference except the energy you bring to it. And then it's the energy that you bring to it that's going to make all the difference in what you experience and how present you are in that experience. So I don't have, you know, I don't have this big drive to go to particular, you know, like, oh, I want to go see St. Louis. It's another city. Is there something in St. Louis that could be really cool to see? Potentially. Is it something of interest for me? Probably not. But I don't know that for sure, because I don't know all the ins and outs of that city. But, and sorry, St. Louis, is nothing personal. It was just the first one that came to my brain. So if any of you out there are thinking St. Louis, it's all good.
Hey, at least St. Louis made your brain.
That's right. I don't even know why. But in another way, I find that also completely fascinating. that you could go to so many different cities and basically have the same experience.
Well, yeah.
And that's kind of fascinating. Because you think, I'm in this new place with all these new people and this new stuff and this new thing, and it should be different. And
but what's new? What's new? You're eating, you're sleeping, you're pooping, you're shopping, there's little trinkets and souvenirs you think you have to have that 5 years later you won't even remember buying. There's bartering and negotiating and thinking like you got a good deal and trying to figure out the currency of how much Monopoly money is it going to take to get this?
I was down at Cardiff. Actually, Moshe and I were out walking on the beach, and I remember as I was watching, because it was very busy because it's summer here, so you know the beaches are busy because it's San Diego. And I just remember looking around at all these people, and you know, there's families and there's groups and there's couples and there's, you know, big families and small families, and all of these people that came to this place to do their thing called vacation. And I couldn't find one that looked like they had any joy going on.
Oh, really? That's sad.
You know what I mean? Like that really, like, I mean, they were smiling and they were doing their thing, but it didn't, there was no feeling of like, look at this amazing place that I'm at. You know, they're like, I came to California to have a vacation. I'm on the beach, and I'm having a vacation.
Sounds like a check in the box.
Yeah. I got my beers. I got my, you know, except you can't have beer on the beach here. But, yeah, and it was just, it's kind of fascinating because it's almost like I'm here because I was told it was a good place to come for my vacation. I've heard that San Diego is amazing, so I should come to San Diego because it's amazing. But circling back around to the idea of intention, you got to make sure you're making all the choices you make from intentionality. So even if going to Omaha, Nebraska seems to spark your interest, then you should go to Omaha, Nebraska, not San Diego, California. Because if Omaha, Nebraska is what's ringing your bells, then there's something in Omaha, Nebraska that's going to make you go, holy crap, that was amazing. And you could still have a good time in San Diego, but you're not going to necessarily have your holy crap, because your inside was saying, Omaha, Omaha, Omaha. For whatever reason. But that's part of that whole trusting the process. That's part of the beingness that we started this conversation with, is enable to, in order to be at the highest levels of aliveness, you have to be at the highest levels of presentness.
Mm-hmm.
In your own experience, in your now, in your energy, in your field, in your body, whatever, however you describe that.
Right.
Because that's where your, that beingness is going to lead you to prompting that's going to take you to the next place that's going to unfold, back to the lift analogy. The bell will go off, and the bell will give you a clear direction of where to go. The question is, do you trust yourself and your universe enough to follow it? And say, cool, I don't know, I'm not sure why I'm going there, but it feels really good, and I'm really excited about it. You know, and that to me is, that's living, that's aliveness, that's, you know, that's my version, that's my truth of it. And there are variations of that, you know. But I think that we all have that, I don't think we'd, in fact, I would go out on a limb and say, I know we all have that guidance system, we all have that connection, we all have that ability. It's just a question of whether we use it or not, whether we tap in, whether we want to go on that magical mystery tour, or whether we just want to ride somebody else's wave. I haven't found anywhere that riding somebody else's wave is all that fun, but unless they ride big ass waves, and I'm afraid of big ass waves, so they're helping me ride the big ass wave because I've never done it before, then it's cool.
Yeah,
you know, then I love it. And we seem to have come full circle again.
Yeah.
We did that really well. Come back to our starting point. I like that.
Yeah, I've got a lot of things kind of trickling through the mind right now with regard to aliveness, being in the moment, the now, having fun, breathing, noticing, being aware. The idea of no mistakes.
What does that mean?
There are no mistakes.
Oh.
It's all part of the journey. This idea that I should have known better. Well, how could you have with what you had to work with in that moment at that time with the amount of sleep, blood sugar level, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. It's just wishful thinking. But a lot of people I work with are judging themselves, thinking they should have turned left instead of right. And if they would have, they would have, you know, avoided this or benefited right. from that. And, you know, that's just a little mental masturbation game that we love mm-hmm. to play. I don't know where we learned it, but we're all pretty good at it until one day we don't want to be any longer. When I was watching the video you sent a couple of weeks ago, the Dr. Joe video of why we're not happy,
mm-hmm.
there was a little clip in there where somebody put stickers over all of the times on a clock that said now.
Yeah.
So I did that in my office. I have a big clock like that, and I took a little yellow sticky and just put now and put it over each one of the numbers.
Oh, right on.
And then I took a little bigger yellow sticky and put in the very center of it that there is only now. I'm just, you know, it's been up for a week and it's been interesting. I see people look over at it and then they look away like they're pretending that they didn't see it because they don't know what to do with that. And I had one person that actually said, how do you even know what time it is? It's like, well, dude, there's like six other clocks in here, you know, that's just one. But do you want to talk about that? Would you like to get into that? And I had one person that I've worked with for a long time says, oh, you're a Buddhist now. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Is that the definition of Buddhism? You know, but it's been fun to just be with everything is in the now. And if you're not here in the now, you're tripping somewhere else and you're missing out on what's here in this now.
In the now.
Yeah.
Because it isn't anywhere else. And it's so funny to me that at this stage in my life to really recognize that there is nothing anywhere else except now. And you go, or I go, you know, part of the mind wants to argue, but there's nothing, there's no argument. There's no, it's just dead space. You just go, oh. Well, it's not really dead space, because if the mind's arguing, it's not dead space. But that idea of being present and letting every moment inform the next moment and guide to the next moment, and but it's a very seamless thing. I think a lot of people probably either get, what are the two things you said, either afraid or
love or fear?
Yeah, the things that pull you to the future, to the past. It was in line with some of those truth quizzes.
Mm.
That being in either of those places can never be satisfying. So that you were talking earlier about that sort of dead zone where people go into no aliveness, chances are good they're being everywhere but in the present.
Yeah.
Because there's
yeah.
a ton of it in the now.
Hmm. Before we started our podcast tonight, Jim and I reviewed a little bit of a clip from Wayne Dyer's work where he was postulating that perhaps only 3 to 4% of our mind is conscious. A very simplistic way of defining what that means is being aware of in this moment, being present, being awake, not operating off of an autopilot mindset of past memories or just mind muscle memory or that sort of schedule, if you will, but truly being open to the infinite in this moment. And if I respect Wayne. He was on the planet in this incarnation, you know, longer than I, and read a few more books and had a few more experiences. And I'd like to think that that's probably a pretty sound notion, that he's not just grasping at straws and mm-hmm. pulling up numbers. But that's astounding. I mean, that's nothing less than, oh my gosh, really? 3-4%? And I used to think 12% was an astounding number. And to think that it's even smaller than that, there's a cry. I mean, there's almost like this part of me that's just wanting to yell and scream, wake the F up, be here, get out of the grind, get out of this habitual place that we've created for ourselves to not feel. I mean, really, the zombie, I mean, gosh, zombies are so popular, zombies on every channel and every game and all that sort of thing. It's like, well, yeah, I get it now, because that's largely what we have become. You gotta go to school. you gotta get some training after school. You gotta find a person. You gotta get married. You gotta have a car. You gotta get a 401k, have a house. And really, I don't know that any of that is of any value. Especially if as people achieve it, it doesn't seem to be satisfying, to the point where they just sit in their house and go, I'm so glad I have a house!
Yeah, well, it becomes a burden.
Who does that? Who does that? Who just, like, come over to my house. I have a house. Just come over. Sit on my couch and let's just be here and resonate and I have a house. Like, does anybody do that? No, we gotta watch this 72-inch monstrosity entertainment thing and have the vibration going and it all has to be something else. Let's get into somebody else's life. Mm. Let's project ourselves into somebody else's story, because surely their story's got to be better than mine. I got myself started, Jim. We all have, I mean, don't you want to, when you're having people that benefit from getting to spend time with you, don't you just want them to know you have such an amazing life? You don't need anything else. Breathe. Just be you. Celebrate that you're here. Be part of the family. Stop striving. Stop competing.
I find myself saying that a lot to younger people in my car when they're talking about, because where I live is right by SDSU, and you know, I see a ton, and Glendale Community or Grossmont Community College, and so I encounter a ton of college age kids, and some a little older than college age that are maybe doing master's programs or PhDs or something else. But the thing that is always fascinating to me is talking to them and then listening and feeling how they feel about what they're doing, and then asking them how they feel about what they're doing.
How's that working for you?
Wow. It's amazing. Because so many when I talk about passion, you know, and I'll say something to the effect of, you know, don't let the system drive the passion out of you. What are you in it for? You know, are you passionate about this, or are you just doing it because this is what you're supposed to do?
Because mm-hmm.
if you're doing it because that's what it's supposed to do, it's going to be a lovely piece of paper that'll never be of value for the rest of your life.
Right. And I'm going to be paying on it for a long time. Or somebody will.
But, and it's always a joy to meet someone who has found their passion in what they're studying, and they're doing it because of their passion. Which speaks to what we've been talking about all along, which is they're present in their experience, and their choices are in the presence of their experience, because they have aliveness in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, it's not this, okay, I'll get through this 4 years, and okay, then what? Okay, well, I guess I'll do two more years, because I'm supposed to, or because, you know, whatever. I mean, typically, I think as you get into the higher levels of education, when you get into PhDs and masters and that kind of stuff, if they're choosing that route, chances are good there's a bit of passion there. But that's not always the case. For many, it's still, they're just continuing on the same ladder because that's what they think they should be doing.
Right. It's a program.
Like, do you like
it? It's a program.
Do you like it?
It's just a program.
What do you plan to do when you're done? What are you passionate about? Why are you studying this course?
Yeah. Somebody put this curricula together and decided for me what I needed to know.
Yeah.
For sure.
Great topic.
This, when you're involved in things that create a time warp, people will say things like, wow, where did the time go?
Yeah.
You're doing something that is giving you a sense of feeling alive. That seems to be a truism. When there's a sense of distortion of time, something happened, they got your almost full focus, if not full focus, that brought you out of all the programming, all of the rote memorization, all of the check boxes, and you freaking showed up.
Yep.
Those are the things that we, I guess, call passions or try to recreate. It's disappointing when you can't recreate it. Because sometimes things are just one-offs. It's like, you got that one. That's all you get. And you're going to have to do some deviation of that. But we try to, like, put all the ingredients back together again to bake that cake again, like it's going to taste the same as it did the first time.
I had a very interesting, actually interesting, another, Jesus, I can't believe this has got pinged again. So I was having a massage yesterday, and I have this great relationship with the guy that does my massage, and he's a really, really awesome therapist and very sensitive, huge energy, and at least when he works on me, I'm very aware and cognizant of his energy in the space and how it's working and what's happening in my energy, and, you know, it's just, that's sort of my thing, and so I really get into enjoying that experience. So one of the things that's evolved with us over time is he doesn't have the language or the words quite yet for what he experiences, and yet he's still really intuitive and really good at it. And, you know, I just run my mouth, you know. So he's also someone who just recently had he just celebrated his 1 year, 1 year from having a liver transplant. The guy's in his early 30s, has had a liver disease, you know, for a long time. And so he went through this transplant therapy, and then he was gone for a little, you know, he was out of the loop for a little bit, and then when I started going back, I really wanted, after he had worked on me the first time, I wanted to share with him what my experience was, because it was so impactful to me. So I did, and he really appreciated it, and we dialogued like that. And so this massage yesterday, I'm face down on the table, and I went deep really fast, and his hands were like fire from the second he got in my energy field. I mean, like, as soon as his hands touched, literally, they were like 95 degree. I mean, they felt hot, you know, and it stayed that way. And as he kept working, he just drove me deeper and deeper, and I was in this really wonderful, deep place, and just, I was really, it felt like I was really aware of, he was clearing out some stuff, and he was opening up some channels, and this was all about, in part, about the move and about the transition that's going on, and it was feeling really, really good. And about halfway through, I was like stoned out of my mind. I mean, just from the work, and I sort of propped myself up, and I said, "Can I get a glass of water?" And he was immediately concerned, you know, like, "Is everything okay?" And I'm like, "Oh no, everything's great. I just there's just a crap ton of energy going on in here today, and I just need some water. So he said, well, so I shared with him what was going on, and he said, well, since you brought it up, he said, it's really interesting because since the beginning of the massage, I've had this thought going through my head, and he said, and the thought is, he needs to let go of whatever this last thing he's holding on to about this move. And I went, that's interesting. And the first thing that went through my mind is my concept about my business is what I have to surrender in this process, is that I am partly having the viewpoint that I may take the business the way, you know, as is, and then when I get there, I can start doing X, Y, and Z. Except it's never felt quite right. You know, it just, it's sort of like, yeah, I got it, but I'm not sure. And so I've never really come to a good place about what's going to happen when I get there, because that's part of the house too. But so I said, well, that's the only thing that comes to mind immediately. And I said, but I'm definitely going to stew on that for a little bit, because if that's what you're picking up, there's some energy in there that needs some assistance kind of moving on. And he said, can I tell you this little parable story that they've shared with me? I said, sure, I'd love, you know, love it. He said, I think it really applies. He told me this story about this river, and this river runs up to a desert. And the river's goal was to create a pathway through the desert. And so for years, this river kept trying to expand and kept trying to push its way through the desert, And it would extend itself way too far, and all the resources would burn off by the sun, and nothing would happen. And so for years, this went on. And one day, something to the effect of the river, he stopped fighting. The river stopped fighting, trying to push its way across the desert. And so it just was allowing this process of kind of the water trying to move through. And what was still happening was, as the water was moving across the desert, the sun would evaporate the water because it's a desert. But what the river wasn't paying attention to is that the water was evaporating and turning into clouds, and the clouds were going to the other end of the desert and dropping the water, so the river was actually connecting on the other end of the desert. I thought I was going to pee myself after he told that, because that was so, it was so apropos of everything that I'm experiencing. To me, it was this moving from one thing to another, and you're not seeing what the connective tissue is. Don't worry about it. And so the that just remarkable kind of thing of this feedback of, okay, just let go, don't take the concept, don't even to the degree that I'm paying attention, I'm still trying to drag things. There's still part of me that wants to go, okay, well, I need to take this. So I have this business, and I have this book, and I have these things, and so they're all going to be just like that when I get there. And so all I have to do is just be there, and poof, it's all going to be good. Except my sense is that I don't have a freaking clue what's going to unfold when I'm there, and that what's going to unfold is so far greater and cooler and more interesting than anything I'm trying to dream up from this vantage point.
Right.
You know, it's like, and then I can take a deep breath and go, okay, now I can go back into now. I don't have to spend time worrying about that.
Love it.
You know, and just to get that kind of feedback like that for me is just magical. To me, that's just extraordinary. But that parable was just so cool. I mean, he was telling me, it was funny because he was kind of a little timid about wanting to tell it because he wasn't sure if I would. And then he told it, and I just laid there and went, holy shit, that was amazing. I'm going to be thinking about that for days. That's some good stuff. So I feel like we're kind of meandering a little.
Yeah, like the river?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah? Is there a little bit of evaporation taking place?
There is.
Condensation on the other end? Yeah.
I'm thinking...
Well, on the topic of... We opened up this idea of we're here on the planet to feel. And throughout the years I've been doing therapy, I could break that down into people either go way out of their way to intensify certain feelings... and to deaden others, or to eliminate others. And that might be an error or a mistake if there is a mistake, that could be something we could learn not to do so much of, is that we want to embrace both ends mm-hmm. of the continuum.
Well, I have a very strong experience. I mean, emotions to me are our guidance system. I mean, at a core level, to me, that they tell me where I am in relation to who I am, what I want, my connection to the larger part of myself, to God, to,
right.
you know.
Well, so many people are entering into the world of the digital, mm-hmm. which is not, it does create feeling, but it's a...
Create sensation, more than feeling, probably.
Yeah, it's not authentic. It's a counterfeit, or it's
manufactured.
Synthetic,
yeah.
if you will.
Yeah.
So if there is a truth that we could offer, that might be to go back to the analog, and to use the body as a primary way of feeling,
mm-hmm.
and that would be through breath. That we would need to breathe deeply and fully and even hard breath of panting, of gasping.
Do you know how challenging that is for people?
yes, I do.
For a majority.
And they avoid it. Most people avoid it.
That's a large part of what I do. It's fascinating.
So... in order to create the ideal brain chemistry requires 20 minutes of deep breathing and sweating, the combination of deep, full breaths to the point of exhaustion, if not quite to that point, but you know, short of exhaustion, but you're working hard to where the heart's pumping, the lungs are working very at an accelerated rate, and your body is now perspiring in order to cool itself. 20 minutes of that triggers a mechanism in the brain that secretes a variety of chemicals that we simply call brain-derived neurotropic factors. These things include anti-anxiety neurochemicals, enzymes, hormones, neurotransmitters, antidepressants,
mm-hmm.
Euphoric, all the whole range from the dopamine, the serotonin, oxytocin. Hardly anybody, I mean, the masses are not doing that. It may be more common in Southern California to do that, but most people are not engaging in
that. Well, that's what's become going to the gym.
But no, not that
doing
many
cardio.
People do that.
Right. But actually, the
what
idea
do you think?
Of doing cardio
5%? You think 5% of America is engaging in... 3 times a week, 20 minutes, not 20 minutes of exercise, 20 minutes of sweating, because going for a walk doesn't do it. Getting on your exercise bike for 10 minutes doesn't do it. It's only that those chemicals only start showing up after you've been doing 20 minutes of those combined things that I was talking about. So you may only turn that on for a couple of minutes if you're exercising for 30 minutes total. You may actually only be generating 5 to 10 minutes of the production of the brain-derived neurotropic factors, which gives us a sense of freaking wellness and health and being alive. And because we're not doing that any longer, we dive more into substances, or we dive more into movies and TV shows and digital video games, and that's where we're headed. And the masses are... Who doesn't have Netflix now? Who doesn't have Amazon Prime? Who isn't listening as to whether or not the new MoviePass app that gives you, for $10 a month, you can go to 3 movies for $10 a month to a theater? It's a thing.
Wow.
It's a thing.
Wow.
It's a thing.
I'm out of the loop.
But, the movies gives you even more of an experience of I'm in the movie than at home anyway. We got to have real experiences. They don't all have to be car crashes either.
Right? Yeah, no, don't think so.
Great topic tonight, Jim.
Yeah.
Great discussion. And you know, one of the, you know, they've all been cool. What I like about this one is we just went for it.
Yeah.
There was very little, if any, direction or intentionality at the beginning. It was more of a trust, kind of a, let's just go, see where this takes us. It's good.
I like it.
It's good. Well.
So we talked about what? We talked about intention. We talked about aliveness.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the importance of both of those in staying in the now, and that in the now is where aliveness lives. It's where you find clarity and focus. We talked about a lot of things, but we came back to those themes consistently.
Sure. Yeah, and we could tag that into those seem to be truths. That we're here to feel,
mm-hmm.
and that the best or the most authentic feeling is going to happen with the body, mm-hmm. as opposed to some drug trip or some digital video game or a movie or a TV show. Nothing against any of those.
Right.
It's just about balance and how much and how often and that sort of thing. But to try to, you know, I'm smelling... What people don't know is we're sitting on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And the boat's moving. There's a light breeze. I smell the smoke from the campfires that's over on the beach. I can actually hear the waves. We heard a bird earlier mm-hmm. tonight that sounded like it was murdering something.
Yeah.
The stars are out. The clouds are blowing by. So there's all this analog, real experience happening. And honestly, one of the reasons I like doing this here on the boat is all of that brings me more here and brings more of me here, and whether that's good or not,
cool,
we'll let the audience
like
be the
of
judge
you.
Of that. All right, well, I guess we should say goodnight.
Yeah, thank you all for joining us in our adventure in truth this week. We definitely appreciate y'all out there that are listening and participating with us, and we're looking forward to, in the near future, we're hopefully going to be able to do some live activity and get our audience engaged and involved at some level, and being able to help steer our conversation or inform our conversation or whatever that might look like.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any way for our listeners to give us some feedback? Can they...
They can, well, they can give us feedback actually via comments on the YouTube.
I'd like to see some.
Yeah, on the YouTube
Tell
pages.
Us we you suck.
Can, yeah, you
we,
can.
We'd get something. That would be awesome.
And you can also do it on the Facebook page, because I am committed now, as I produce each video or each segment up to the YouTube page, to then share it on our Facebook page. So you can go either place and... ask questions, make comments, share your thoughts, add your 25 cents, whatever it is. We welcome that feedback. We welcome the what do you call those? Subscribe to the
yeah.
channel.
Yeah, there
all
you
that
go.
Good stuff,
there you
so.
Go. Likes and thumbs up and
Likes
all that
and
sort of thing. Yeah.
Sharing and all that's good stuff.
Right on. And thank you for doing that work, Jim. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. Thank you for a great night, Jeff.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We also offer video versions of our podcast. Visit our page on YouTube at Adventures in Truth Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Like, connect, and follow with us on Facebook. Want to book us for your next podcast or to speak at your event? Head over to our webpage at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com at the bottom of the page and send us a note. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you again at Adventures in Truth Podcast. podcast.